Welcome to the Evolved Caveman, where men learn to be successful and happy with your host, Dr. John Schinnerer, as he shares the most impactful ideas and practices for you to get the most from your relationships, your work, and from your life. Now here's Dr. John.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. John back with another episode in 2021 of the Evolved Caveman podcast. And I am thrilled to have with me today, Shayna James. And for 15 years, Shayna has coached more than 1,000 leaders, CEOs, authors, speakers, and people with big visions who step into more powerful leadership, start and grow businesses, increase their impact, find love, create a legacy, and become more personally inspired and fulfilled, although not all at the same time. Referred to as a secret weapon, she cuts through distraction and provides direct access to your confidence, power, and clarity. She's also a translator between women and men, which we'll talk about today. She provides effective tools to transform conversations and dynamics that have gone awry into connection and collaboration. She holds a master's in psychology, and she has more than a decade facilitating groups and workshops. She started multiple businesses and has helped hundreds of entrepreneurs start their own. Her range of skills is quite vast, and I'm really excited to have her with me here today. Shayna, how the heck are you?
I'm doing all right in the midst of insanity in our world and our politics and our families.
Yeah. And well, yeah, just to provide context for everyone, the day that we're recording this is the day after an angry mob stormed the Capitol, January 6th.
Yes.
So that was a little bit unnerving. I think I was left with a pit in my stomach.
Yes.
All agreed. Day, pretty much.
Agreed. Yep.
I think it's the closest we've ever come to failing as a democracy.
Yeah. It's almost like I can't totally process it, right? It's so big, the implications of it and why it happened. It's deep. I feel like it's going to take a while to understand.
Yeah. And it really drove home the point for me of the fragility of democracy and how it has to be handled with respect and ideally kindness and care.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it can't withstand years and years of lies and mistruths. And I think one of the things that bums me out the most about the last few years is the realization that we're living in a post-truth society.
God, right. And I often think about it. It seems like our country is, I used to think of it like a teenager, right? Like if we had to age our country.
Now it's an old man.
Now it's sort of, actually, when I was watching Joe Biden yesterday, I was like, oh, it's kind of like Grandpa Biden coming and being like, come on, people. Let's get it together. But now it feels a little more like we've been in the toddler phase for the last bunch of years of just like throwing shit at the wall and not really understanding the impact. And so I don't know. I don't know how far you want to go down that road.
I don't either. But I read an article recently that this presidential election was a referendum on two types of masculinity, traditional versus progressive. And I think there's a lot of legs to that argument.
Yeah, right. And traditional masculinity. And just, you know, in some ways, I think there were some healthy pieces of traditional masculinity and there were some toxic pieces of traditional masculinity. Right. And so I think the toxic pieces really were highlighted in the past bunch of years.
All right. Well, let's focus. And I just want to give that perspective to listeners. So Shayna, tell me about you at your very best. What was your story of hassle to happiness? And how did you get into working with men? And why the hell are you still doing it?
Okay, those are a lot of questions. Let's start with how I got into working with men. So I was doing my master's in psychology thinking I was going to work with women. And I became part of an intentional community where we were really focused on authenticity and, you know, kind of going to the mat with each other, being really honest about our attractions and our frustrations and our jealousies and all of those things. And two of the men who were part of that were experiencing so much more freedom and confidence and, you know, just more of what they wanted in their lives. And so they decided they were going to create a course for men where women would give honest and loving feedback. Mm. And so I was invited to be part of that team. And that was almost 20 years ago. And it radically changed my life. I mean, I had all kinds of personal struggles with men, you know, not like I still don't, right? We're all human. But, you know, at that point, I was young. I was in my early 20s. And it was like, you know, men are this way, or men only objectify me, or whatever those things were. I had a chance to actually see behind the veil or behind the curtain. And men started showing up with vulnerability and, you know, with their longings and their needs that hadn't been accepted or welcomed. And it just kind of slayed me in a way, you know, it like cut my heart open. And I started to really understand the struggles of men in a way that I never had.
And so where do you stand now? I mean, so do you see men as a coach then currently?
Yeah.
Okay. And you have a TEDx talk as well. And, mm-hmm. and the title kind of interested me, and it's What 1,000 Men's Tears Reveal About the Crisis Between Men and Women, correct?
Yeah.
So what did you talk about in that talk?
I talked a lot about vulnerability and how unwelcome it has often been for men, you know, and one of the stories I told was walking down the hall of my son's kindergarten, and he was crying because he was scared about something. And this woman walked by us, not knowing anything that was happening. And she said, "No tears." And I almost punched her in the face. Mm-hmm. You know, I like thankfully held back. I was like, okay, I can't do violence here. But, you know, as she walked by, I just looked at my kid and I was like, it is okay to cry. It is okay to feel everything you're feeling. And a couple of days later, randomly, synchronistically, whatever, her son came up to me and said, "I got in trouble today for being mean to 3 kids." And I was like, well, no wonder, right? You know, I mean, when your parent tells you you cannot feel your emotions, you start to take it out on other people. And so part of the talk was about all the things that I've seen, you know, over the past couple decades where men come to me and don't feel okay about their needs or their desires or, you know, asking for them. And where they feel like they've got to be the rock and hold it together and not show any of that vulnerability, and how we as a society can actually start to come together to welcome men's vulnerability as a strength rather than some kind of weakness.
It's interesting to me. One of the things I've thought about in this man box culture, which is, you know, how we are socialized typically as boys and teenagers, is where those messages come from. And I think at times they can come from your parents. Stereotypically, it's the father, but not always. It can be friends, it can be peers, and it can be other adults, coaches, maybe sports coaches. Yeah. But one of the questions which I have for you is, do you have any idea or any feeling of how many times it takes for it to leave a mark? In other words, you know, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about. You know, how many times do we need to hear that? Because I've kicked this around just in my own head. And I guess I've kind of come up with an answer. So I was just curious if you
have any. I'm curious what your answer is. I mean, I don't know. I think when we're young, we're so impressionable that it really starts to become the fabric or the structure of our identity. So I don't think we have to hear it very much. But I also think that we tend to hear those messages a lot. Like we tend to be, you know, kind of underwater in them when it's in our family dynamic. It happens all the time. So I don't know, what's your sense of
the number? Well, I think if, you know, if you're dealing with a young boy who's relatively smart and sensitive, which I really think most of us are born in that vein, it doesn't take many times at all. I would say 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and you've internalized that message. And one of the things I've thought about in the past was when I would misbehave as a small, stupid boy, my mom would get mad and she would say, you know, "You're a selfish, spoiled little brat."
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know how many times that was actually said.
Yeah.
I know,
but
that
you remember it, you know, 40 something years later.
That phrase rattled around in my skull for many, many years. And I had to challenge it, catch it, you know, kind of deconstruct it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I had a conversation with my mom recently as adults about this. And she said, "Oh, you know, I only said that once or twice."
I said it once.
And I'm like, my memory is I heard that dozens of times. Now, I don't know what the actual truth is.
We don't know what the truth is.
But I don't, it's just an interesting question to me because I think it brings up that idea of trauma in men.
Yes.
And think of little t for trauma, not big T.
Yep.
But how much is enough for this man box culture to take hold and shape our behavior.
Right. And then think about, you know, for men who are heterosexual and in relationships with women, if there are a couple times where a woman says to you like, oh, you're selfish for wanting that, or I don't want to hear it, or, you know, why are you being a baby, or your tears are uncomfortable for some way, right? Yeah, I would imagine it only takes a couple times with that person for you to be like, whoa, this person is not a safe place for me to now share my truth and what's real for me.
Well, especially if you've been in relationships in the past your whole life where you've gotten those similar messages, exactly. And then you get one message and you're like, oh shit, shouldn't show that anymore.
Yes, exactly. Right. They all,
and it probably happens faster than conscious thought.
Yes.
You know, or it's the thought is so quick that we don't even catch it.
Yep. Agreed.
So have you had that experience of being in a relationship where someone tells you that whatever you're feeling is okay?
Yes, I have. It's really amazing. And
what's that like?
What is it like? I mean, it's like so many things. It's like a breath of fresh air, you know, that it's like mind, my heart gets to actually, feel whole. I get to feel welcomed, you know, all of those voices in my head about what's wrong with me get challenged. It's really beautiful. I don't imagine that many people get to have that experience. I imagine you might have that with your wife because you're both mm-hmm. doing this work. Yeah.
Yeah, my fiance, but yes.
Fiance, yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it feels, and I remember the day it happened, it was, you know, I had come over to her house after work and I was tired and stressed, and she knows, which is great and frustrating at the same time sometimes, but, you know, she told me, look, you're allowed to feel whatever it is you're feeling. So I think right. I apologized for being irritable.
Yeah.
And it was like the emotional shackles kind of came off.
Yes. Yes.
And I was like, oh, you mean it's okay?
Yeah. Right now there's a choice between, right? We're allowed to feel whatever we feel. And then we have a choice about how we act that out or how much mm-hmm. consciousness we bring to a situation or, you know, what we want to create with our partners. But I think most people don't get to that point that you just spoke about. And so you can't get to that conscious navigation or collaboration with a partner.
Right. Well, and so let's shift gears a little bit. I guess it's in the same vein, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about how to create more of that connection and passion in relationships. I guess this is one of the ways, i.e. vulnerability.
Yeah.
What are some of your tips, or how do you teach people to create more spark or desire in a relationship?
Yeah. Well, I think what you just said is really part of it. It's a perfect segue because I think the more we are willing to reveal and be honest about what's going on, whether it's I just got my feelings hurt, or I feel, you know, unseen, or I feel actually kind of upset about that thing you said yesterday and I'm still stewing over it, right? That really keeps the spark alive. If we just keep shoving those things under the rug, we have to numb out in a way because we feel that internal tension and resentment and frustration. And so as we turn down the dial so that we don't have to feel all of that, we also lose the passion and the spark. So oftentimes when I'm working with men on having a better sex life or having more passion, where we really start with is, you know, what are the truths that you have not been saying? What are the feelings that you haven't been expressing? Because we've got to help you come back alive in a way so that you can then embody this aliveness, which actually subconsciously has an impact on your wife, on your partner, again, if you're in a heterosexual relationship.
Right. So backing that up a second. So when you ask men what they've been hiding or what they haven't been stating or what they're feeling, do you feel like most men are aware of what they're feeling, or to what extent are they aware?
Yeah, it depends. I would say I've experienced a whole range, but often men come to me and they have thoughts. And then I say, great. Okay, that's the first layer. Now let's check in with your body and let's check in with your emotions. And oftentimes it takes a little while. They're like, well, yeah. And then I think about this and I'm like, okay, great. And then now we're back in the thoughts. And so it does take some walking, you know, through or helping men, I think, slow down in my experience to get in touch with those pieces.
Yeah. To me, it takes a little bit of education because you'll get a lot of, well, Shayna, I think I'm feeling hurt.
Yeah.
Is that a feeling?
Right.
You know,
Right. Well, like, oh, what does kind of actually feel like? Right. What's the sensation happening in your body? And I, you know, I had a client yesterday who I was tying it in. He was like, I'm doing all the right thing. You know, I'm bringing my wife coffee. I'm doing nice things for her. I'm feeding our animals because I know she likes all those things, but our sex life isn't as passionate or it doesn't feel as alive. And so we point, you know, I got to this point with him where I was like, okay, you're doing the things in your head that you think she wants, but your way of relating to her from what we had talked about was very intellectual. It wasn't that, you know, integrating, I often talk about head, heart, and balls, right? Like, you know, that integrating that primal part of you versus the one who's here to just caretake or, you know, be the good guy.
So how do we, I mean, because it makes me think of like a husband and wife, or I mean, we're assuming heterosexual couples, but it may not be. Yeah. So forgive the languaging if you're not heterosexual, but I'm thinking of two different couples, one who's kind of living parallel lives who don't have that emotional connection. Mm-hmm. And then another couple that is emotionally connected, vulnerable, sharing what they feel, and highly sexually connected as a result. Yeah. How do you get from step A to step B?
Right. So one of the things I was thinking, I was working with a woman this morning and she said to me, you know what? I just had this revelation that I thought my lack of desire for my husband was about the position or how he was touching me. And I just realized that it's about whether we're connected or not. And it takes a little while to understand, well, what do you mean by connected? And, you know, how would I know if we were actually connected? But I think to get from the place of distant or, you know, kind of numb or intellectual, part of it takes that embodiment, right? Like actually, like you said, educating and learning. Oh,
explain embodiment though for someone that doesn't know that word.
Right. So when I think about embodiment, it's like you can experience the world. If you walk into a room, you could look around and you could label everything, you know, oh, that's a cabinet. That's a, I'm thinking about a kitchen, right? That's a cabinet. That's a stove. That's whatever. You
can also stereotypical.
Yes, stereotypical woman. I think about my kitchen. And, you know, you could also walk into the room and actually feel the mood of the room, right? If there are people in the room, you can have that sense of, and it impacts, you can feel it in your stomach. You can feel it in your chest. Sometimes you could feel it in your, you get tingles or, right? So embodiment to me is starting to wake up the fact that we actually can take in the world in different ways. We have an emotional response to the world. We have an embodied, a physical sensation response to the world. And then we have the intellectual response to the world.
Yeah. And I always have this association. One of the things I do is teach men to take their attention out of their head and into their body to figure out what it is they're actually feeling.
Yes.
And I really think, you know, Descartes, Rene Descartes, the philosopher, fucked us for several hundred years by saying, I think, therefore I am, or maybe it's just me. I don't know. Because I was like, oh, yes, I think, therefore I am. That's me. I'm a thinker.
Right.
And it totally disconnected me from my body for years. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's part of that man box culture and how we're socialized, that we're taught to be, or rewarded for being intellectual, problem solving, but it screws us up in relationship because we can't shift gears into our body.
Right. And I think about men who tend to be really successful in their work and their businesses, and they go to work and they're listened to and respected. And, you know, there's excitement because there's collaboration and they're admired. And then they come home and it doesn't go well. I think that's the main thing that happens, is that there isn't a shift from, all right, my thoughts are what, you know, are creating this power here in the office often. I mean, you know, there's emotion and embodiment as well with that, but more they can rest more into the intellect. And then when you come home, especially if you're in a heterosexual relationship with a woman, you know, intellect is lovely. There's nothing wrong with it. You can have a really great time. You can make jokes. You can have deep intellectual, you know, there are, what's the sapiosexual, like I've often identified myself as a sapiosexual, like ideas turn me on, you know?
Oh, okay.
So it's not like there's anything wrong with that, but especially in a long-term relationship, that will fade, or that won't really create the turn on that the body and the emotional experience will create.
So are there, I mean, because, you know, I talk about, or the question was, how do you help men create more of a spark? And because I guess I'm a man, my mind goes to sex.
Yeah.
So what else can we do to create more spark, to create more in the bedroom. And it makes me think of, well, let me just ask you and see what.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that just came up for me was listening, and listening can happen out of the bedroom and in the bedroom. But if we're going into the bedroom, right, when you're listening, and again, you can listen with your ears to what sounds is she making, or what, you know, verbal expressions are happening, but you can also listen with your body. And you can feel, when you start to actually tune in, you can start to feel, is there tension in this woman's body? Is there a resistance? Is there a kind of like gritting her teeth, or is she really relaxing and enjoying this? And am I willing to engage with that, right? Instead of like, all right, well, if I want to have sex and I want to have an amazing orgasm, then we've just got to keep barreling forward no matter what's happening. And I'm just going to make this happen. I find that most women after a short amount of time are pretty over that, and their turn on fades. But when, yeah.
I was going to say, why is relaxation so important for women around the issue of sex?
Yeah. As a woman myself, and having worked with many women, I will say that when our bodies are not relaxed, it's really hard to feel pleasure.
And or so, orgasm either. I mean, both, right.
Especially orgasm is like, you know, yeah. Ultimate expansive pleasure. And so the more you're helping a woman relax, and when a woman feels seen and understood, right. Or if you notice something, like I talk about this sometimes where I had a partner who we were in the middle of having sex or making out or something. And he was like, "You're not really that into this right now, are you?"
the setup gave it away. We're having sex or making out or something.
Something. But you know, it was so beautiful because normally, you know, we had incredible chemistry, and he was willing to say, "Hey, something different is happening here in this moment, and let's look at it. Let's not be attached." So that's another piece, is not being attached to some kind of outcome. And so, you know, it turned out I had been to a funeral that day, and I was still really, I was sad. I was grieving, and I was trying to be in it, but I wasn't really. And he just held space for me. Like you said, you know, he accepted where I was, and I just cried. And then we ended up having incredibly passionate sex because that part of me was allowed. So another thing that creates more spark in the bedroom is not trying to get back to happy. Right. Or we could talk about definitions of happiness, but not trying to get back to everything's okay, but actually welcoming more of this range of emotional responses into the bedroom.
Yeah. And I think it's a great example, because I think when you do make allowance or make space for the other person's, your partner's emotions, that in and of itself leads to greater emotional depth, connection, and ultimately sex.
Totally. Right. It's like, then you've got more, more colors on the canvas, there's more pleasure available.
And I think the other thing that enters into creating spark, and I think you alluded to this, is communication. I mean,
of course.
I'm thinking of Melanie Curtin, who's a sex researcher, and she found, she found that 90% of men, or 90% of women say 90% of men are not good in bed. So yeah, women say 90% women who are sexually experienced say 90%
of men are not good in bed.
Are just not good in bed. Because I think they are just pile driving, you know, it's kind of like, this is what I saw on YouPorn, like Pornhub, like, what are you talking about? This is the girl in the video is excited. Yeah. And I think that's typically our education. And she found that communication is a big deal. So let's talk a little bit about communication around sex and also kind of, I think, foreplay in and out of the bedroom.
Yes. Okay, so one of the things I think about for communication is I love conversations, and I think it's really helpful for couples when you have conversations out of the bedroom, right? So before sex, conversations about desire and what you really like and your fantasies and what feels good to you and why, going to that deeper place, not just if I have this fantasy, but well, why do I have this fantasy? What am I actually wanting to experience? And then the debrief conversation about the sex we just had or the sex we had yesterday, you know, what did you really love about it? Or what was exciting for you? And what do you want to experience more of? You can kind of get around the complaints and the frustrations by saying, what did you want more of? Right. So it's a more positive conversation. Mm-hmm. and for couples in the bedroom to be willing to actually say, and you know, this has been hard for me as a woman to actually say, will you do that lighter? Or will you, you know, touch me over here? And if I say it once, it's hard for me to say it again if it isn't quite the way I want it to. And then even a third time, it's like, oh God, I'm not supposed to do this. You know, I'm supposed to just
okay, so could I interrupt you there? Because what's the worst thing that we men can do when you say something like that in the moment?
What's the worst thing? Like,
or worst couple of things.
The worst couple of things are to get frustrated or irritated or act like it's a problem. You know,
take that, it personal. Yeah.
Yes. To take it personally. And, you know, I have tons of compassion for that, having worked with so many men over the years. And so I'm not, you know, you're not bad or wrong if you take something personally, but just know that it's not going to create more connection or spark. And so it could, well, it could create more connection or spark if you're willing to be vulnerable with your partner about it and be like, okay, hold on. I just, you know, I just, that just hit me hard and I just took it personally. And so I just, I need a moment to recover. Right. And to be able to work it out together, that to me is ultimately the point of, okay, we're in these relationships together. We're growing together. We're healing together. We're having more and more pleasure and learning to love better. So if you take something personally and you get stuck in the shame spiral and you just deal with it on your own, and then you try to keep having sex, right? That's where things start to get farther and farther apart.
So what would you say if I'm a man who was raised in, I don't know, a very restrictive sexual household, like very prudish household, think Catholic, I don't know. We'll just insult the Catholics while we're doing this. Or I will. I'll take responsibility.
Okay, you do, you take responsibility.
But like, and I have no experience with this personally, but let's say I can't even say the names of the body parts.
Yeah.
How am I, how can I talk about it then?
Right. Well, I feel like that's where I come in. So oftentimes I get to work with men who haven't been able to say what they want, or, you know, I remember one time when I first started working with men, I did a session where a man, I noticed he was really nervous and, you know, really acting awkward. And I said, what's going on? And he said, I can't, just having a hard time, you know, you have a body, you have a woman's body and you have breasts and I can't really look at them and, but they're right there. And, you know, and so we slowed it down and I was like, okay, let's try you looking at my body. Just know that I'm an invitation, you know, it's welcome. So it's kind of like repatterning, you know, I get to practice a lot with men, you know, let's have you say the thing that you feel terrified to say, or the thing you think makes you dirty or gross, or the thing you think makes you weak. And be in the face of a loving woman to heal that, so that when you go back into your relationship or relationships, you're not starting from square one and you're not, you know, it's okay if you're going to have feelings or get triggered, but again, it goes better, you know, things go easier the fewer triggers we have. And so I love getting to practice those things and heal those things with men.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was kind of joking about it earlier, but I think that was me earlier in my life where I just, I was uncomfortable saying and talking about these things in the bedroom. Yeah. And if you can't say the names, if you can't say cock and pussy and you know, different name, whatever you want to call them, but if you can't say them, you can't have these conversations, you can't get better.
Yes. Agreed.
And you can't get more connected. And so I think that's a really big deal as well.
Yeah.
Huh. So, okay. I wanted to go touch on foreplay because I think for a lot of men, we think that foreplay begins in the bedroom. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I expand the definition of sex to be not just what's happening in the bedroom to, but to be what's happening everywhere. And so, and not just genitals, but like you could be touching my fingers, right? We could have like finger to finger. And it could feel orgasmic. So I also expand the definition of orgasm, right? There's this sense of energy and pleasure moving through your body, and maybe a sexual orgasm or one that happens in the bedroom with genital penetration or stimulation might be higher frequency or more intense. But, you know, you can start to feel orgasmic anywhere. And there are a lot of people who feel energetic orgasms and all different kinds of orgasms. I did a podcast with a woman who talked about the 14 different types of orgasms for men, Susan Bratton. I don't know if you know her. She's awesome.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. So, first of all, right. I like to expand men's definition and if we think about it that way, you know, foreplay happens in the morning when you wake up, if you wake up with a woman, and if you're with her, you know, maybe there's a little bit of touching, or even just looking into each other's eyes or wishing her a good day. Or if you're living apart, it might be a text or a flirting, you know, something like that. So yeah, I think it goes better. I don't know. I don't always like to genderize it, but I think there is a way that women's bodies can tend to open more slowly. And so if there's more connection and more pings throughout a day, she's going to be more likely to be able to open later in the day.
Yeah, I think you're exactly on point. I mean, I like the idea that the brain is the biggest sex organ in the female body. Yes. And so you're trying to stimulate that all day long, whether it's by sending, you know, a loving text, or I'm thinking about you, or you look hot in those jeans, or, you know, I like to get little love quotes, I guess. Like, you can get little, they're not really memes, but, you know, they're just love quotes with a little graphic behind them, and text those to my fiance.
I love that. And also randomly sharing what impacts you, or, you know, it could be around, oh, your ass looks great in those jeans, or it could be like, you know, when you washed our kids' hair last night and I looked at you, you know, with all the suds on your hands, and I just saw the love that you were bringing for our child, like, you know, it really touched me deeply. I don't know. Yeah. I just made that one up out of the blue, right? It could be about anything. It could be about any way that she either took care of you, or that she took care of herself, you know, any way that she spoke a truth or took a risk or something like that. So I think, you know, as you continue to get more and more personal with the things, they go deeper as well.
So let me ask you this. You know, my fiance gets turned on by emotions, like when I share how I'm feeling with her, which then became a joke, because most things become a joke with me. But then I would be like, hey, honey, I'm sad right now. Do you wanna? And she would kind of laugh and slap me. But you said you were a sapiosexual, so ideas turn you on. What about emotions?
Emotions
sharing how they feel.
Yeah.
Why? And, Do you have any idea why?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's a person's heart is opening, and a person's making themselves available to be connected with. Now, in my TED talk, I distinguish between dumping emotions and sharing emotions. And so if somebody comes to me and just starts, you know, if a man comes to me and is kind of sobbing and falling apart and asking me to fix him, I may not necessarily feel as turned on. I may feel compassion and love and all kinds of things. But when I see a man feel sadness without going into shame about it, you know, when he's actually deeply in his own truth while loving himself and feeling the vulnerability, that to me tends to be a really big turn on, that there's a strength and there's a vulnerability present at the same time.
Do you think I'm just kind of brainstorming here. Do you think self-awareness is part of that?
I do. And as you said that, I thought, oh, I feel safer when there's self-awareness, and women are often tracking for safety. And so
safety and security are big across the board, in my opinion. And it doesn't matter if it's parenting, if it's in your primary relationship, if you're managing a team at work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's research to back up all those.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I get your point of gender earlier. And I think in that example we were talking about, it was female, male, but I like the distinction between sex and gender.
Yeah.
So sex is male, female, gender is masculine, feminine, and you can have a very masculine woman, you can have a very feminine man, or anywhere in between.
Yes. Uh-huh. The whole range of it. Yeah.
Okay. So let's shift gears a little bit, and thank you for going there with me. I appreciate that. I think it's really, really helpful for men, because I think we need to learn to cross that divide a little bit more, a little bit better with our words. I mean, in terms of speaking about what's going on in the bedroom, asking questions, being curious, not taking things personally. Yeah. But how does passion enter into men's careers, their dreams, and ultimately how satisfied they are with life?
Yeah, well, the first thought I had, I'm not sure, I think this connects, but you can tell me if I'm going off track. But when I think about a man who learns to be more connected, to listen more fully, to actually experience life through his body, you know, some of these things start to happen when you're working on your own relation, your romantic relationship, right? Some of these things start to become clearer. When those men who I've worked with go back into their careers, people trust them more, people respect them more. They actually have more job satisfaction, you know, or they shift and they choose another job. So it's not just like, oh, I have to slug through this no matter what. So I find that then those men step into more inspiring positions or careers. I've had men come back to me and say, my boss has no idea what's been going on with me, but, you know, is getting all these requests for me to lead meetings. Or I've had other men who are like, you know, my boss suddenly wanted to offer me a promotion and I didn't even ask for it. It's like when that aliveness translates back into work and into the personal connections, because you and I both know, right? There's so much of work that is actually about the relationships. Absolutely. And the personal connections, you know, that's how I see the passion translate.
Okay. So I remember I was having a conversation about this man, and he was terrified that if he began to tap into his emotions at home,
yeah,
holy shit, then what happens when I go to work? And like, yeah, he was afraid that he would like start sobbing at work and wouldn't be able to turn it off, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It's that idea of, you know, scratching the scab and the scab starts bleed, the wound starts, yes, bleeding. I'm never going to be able to
Right. And that to me is a fear. I imagine you've seen that a lot, that many people have, like, once I start crying, I'm never going to be able to stop. And in my experience, it's usually not that way. Right. I mean, sometimes I know when I got divorced, I cried every day for 6 mm-hmm. months or a year, but it wasn't continuous. You know, it was like, oh, things would make me cry or tear up and then I would move on. And so with men, sometimes I work with them and like, okay, so what's, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen if you did start to cry in a meeting? You know, what's your fear? And often it's the fear that they would be rejected. But I love Mike Robbins' work where he talks about bringing your whole self to work and the authenticity,
yeah,
and vulnerability.
Great.
And right. And he's talked about going into meetings where CEOs have cried and finally the team has come up to him and said, geez, we've been waiting for that for like 5 years or 10 years. We've been working for this guy and we've never seen a vulnerable bone in his body. And we've all been frustrated and thank you for allowing that. Right. So I think these days people are getting more and more human at work, and you could always excuse yourself, right? If you're feeling emotional, you could always say, wow, okay, something's coming up for me. And, you know, I'm going to go take a walk for a couple minutes and then I'm going to come back. I think people respect it more and more these days. And I see that when emotion is present, people get more inspired, right? Like if you have a vision and you have a mission that you want to accomplish and it's all heady theoretical, okay, that's one level. People could get inspired. But if you start feeling the emotions of the impact that your vision or your mission could have on people, people feel that and they become much more likely to support you and to get behind you.
Yeah, I would say I remember when I was doing the radio show back about, I don't know, 15 years ago, and I was pretty fresh out of Cal and very in my head and was just kind of sharing research studies and findings. And I had this realization, this epiphany that, holy shit, like, this is good information, but it's not going to motivate anyone to do any real lasting change. And what I need to motivate change are, I need to be able to emote, I need to be able to tell a story that has emotion within it. And it makes me think of, there was research that came out recently where they had people get up in front of a group and share something that was vulnerable. And then they judged. So they had them report on what was your experience after presenting.
Yep.
What was your experience after watching other people present something vulnerable? And after the individual spoke themselves, they felt doubt and a little bit of self-loathing, perhaps, and maybe some embarrassment. Like, oh my God, why did I do that? That was so stupid. I told too much. And at the same time, when they watched other people be vulnerable, they thought, wow, that's so courageous. I love to hear that. I feel closer to this person. So I feel it's important to share that study just to get the idea out that that's a huge gap between self and other perception in this area in particular.
Yeah, in this area in particular, we often have a sense, and I think for men especially, because most men have been raised not to do that, right? I think that there is that gap that we can view ourselves more negatively, and yet people feel closer to us and people trust us more, right? If my experience, especially as a woman with men, is if I experience something deep within, right? I can, you know, have that spidey sense that I've developed a lot over many years, but I think a lot of women have it, even if they can't put words to it. Mm-hmm. If there's something going on and you're angry or you're upset, but on the surface, you're showing that you're fine, I have less trust for you. And doesn't make you a bad person.
It's why? Just,
why? Because there's an incongruence. There's a sense of like, I don't know, how is that going to come out? At some point, it's probably going to come out in some way, shape, or form. Whatever's in there, if you're not showing it now, is it going to come out in an attack? Is it going to, you know, or is it never going to come out? And then you're going to become a ghost of yourself, and then you're going to, you know, really not show up anymore. So I think it can come out in either, or it can happen in either of those ways. It becomes something that becomes either resentment or anger, or it's something that just has a man or person just become more and more deadened.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mind goes all over the place when you're talking. I think you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, it's interesting. The other part of this is like when we're talking about sharing emotion at work and being vulnerable, I think that part of this is that we're shooting for the ideal, kind of what you referred to earlier about, you know, share. It's a balance between intellect and emotion where you can share like, gee, Shayna, you know, it really upset me when you shut me down in the meeting. Mm-hmm. But I can say that calmly and I'm sharing how it made me feel versus raging about shutting me down in the meeting or sobbing uncontrollably over the fact that, I don't know, I didn't get my bonus versus saying to my boss, hey, you know, I'm a little bit
having
upset
a hard time
and
with this.
I'm disappointed. I'm struggling with this. Yeah. Like those are two different things. And I think that takes work on individuals' parts awareness.
Yeah, I talk about that in my TED Talk too. And I think it does take work to be able to feel something, you know, notice it, put words to it that aren't explosive, and then to also collaborate with someone else, right? Like it's very different to say, I'm struggling with this. I'm kind of, you know, I'm feeling upset about this. You know, is there a way that we can talk about this or how can we work this out together versus then starting to attack someone or you're bad, you're wrong, I can't believe, and then that's the fear of where you might lose your job or have some really
legitimate
negative
fear.
Impact. Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's see, where else can we go from here? This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed this.
Me too.
So let's talk a little bit about integrating a client's dreams with their current work situation. In other words, like I've got clients that, you know, maybe he's like a senior VP at Wells Fargo and he's been very successful, makes a lot of money and is completely unfulfilled and unsatisfied at work.
Yeah.
You know, how do we get to that passion and, I mean, incorporated in either this position or finding
or something
position?
Else, right? I mean, well, I think that's there's the willingness to take a risk and say, I'm not happy here. Not, you don't have to say it to your
your boss,
or if you are the supervisor. Boss, right? But admitting that to yourself first and considering that there's another possibility. So oftentimes if I'm working with a man who's struggling in that way, we start to look at, well, what does make you happy? You know, what does matter to you? What experiences have you had in the past year or decade or whatever where you actually really felt lit up or inspired? And what's the risk here, right? For some people, there is a fear of, well, I need to take care of my family and I don't know where money's going to come from if I don't make it. For other people, there's actually a lot of savings and you could make a transition, but the fear is a little more of being seen as someone who is less than, right? If I move on from being a CEO of this company to something that actually makes me happy, but there's less status, then we start to dive into, well, what does that actually mean about you? Does it mean anything about you? Or is it just these old ideas and stories that you have? So I think desires and meaning are a big part of that. And then the willingness to let go of expectations and who you were supposed to be and the ideas of what make you successful.
And so how do you coach them towards taking those steps? Because those are difficult steps.
Yeah, I mean,
those
they are difficult steps. So, right.
They're high bars.
Sometimes slowly. You know, first we talk about, okay, what really matters? And then I start having them look at what are some ways that could happen in the world, and starting to have conversations with other people, and, you know, and then starting to make moves one step at a time, right? It might be a conversation. Yeah.
So backing up, how do you help them identify what really matters? Because I can go to values, kind of helping them just look at a list of values and kind of identify what they value most.
Yes.
And I would say, you know, come up with three, maybe give or take plus or minus two. But the other way I like to go is, what have you been complimented for in the past, which can help identify strengths.
Yep.
The problem with that is, I think that, I don't know if this is men and women or just men, but we suck at internalizing compliments.
Yeah.
And
I
so
work
we get,
with men a lot on that. Like, I'm like, did you hear me just say, did you hear me acknowledge you? And they're
stop.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, let's slow it down, because I actually want you to take that in, you know. And oftentimes men end up in tears or just like, whoa, I've never really felt that before. And now if you can't receive, then imagine what's going to happen in the bedroom, or imagine what's going to happen in your relationship.
Yeah.
Receiving feels like a big part. And the other way that I like to help men understand this is through experiences. So I think values are great. Strengths are great, though sometimes you have strengths that you're really good at, but it's not something that lights you up or makes you happy. Mm-hmm. So I also like going to experiences. You know, what are the experiences you've had where you've left just feeling like, damn, that was awesome. You know, that was something I'm going to remember for a really long time. That was something that really mattered to me.
The other thing that I think kind of enters in here is one of the things I've noticed about a lot of men that I've worked with in the past is that they, because positive emotions are quiet and fleeting and fragile and they whisper to us.
Yeah.
We're not very good at picking them up or being aware of them. And so I've got to train them to become more aware of them so that they can even begin to realize, oh yeah, this experience, it did make me feel relaxed or contented or proud, or I felt awe or inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comment on that? Any thoughts?
I love what you just said, that positive emotions are more fleeting and wispy or whispering. And I think that's it's a beautiful,
I mean, you know,
way.
Damn well when you're angry, right?
Right. It
but
is
you don't
loud
necessarily
and fierce
know
and intense
when you're relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the way you start to know when you're relaxed is to be more aware of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can start to be aware of what spaciousness feels like and what ease feels like and what delight feels like, right? They're more tingly. And so I often have men slow down and, okay, the first response is going to be in your head and your mind and your thoughts. Okay, now let's just slow down. And rather than looking for something, let's see what arises. Because when we get slower and quieter, then we can start paying attention to those, the more subtle things. And then the more subtle things actually start to be louder, right? The pleasure actually starts to
right as soon as you tune
intense.
Into them and train yourself to notice them. Because I mean, some of the tells I like are expansiveness in the chest.
Uh-huh.
You know, the chin might come up slightly, like in pride.
A little bit of
shoulders
warmth.
Get pulled back. Warmth.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. In the face.
Relaxation.
The chest.
Deeper breathing.
Yes.
But it's almost as if you're noticing an absence of physiological tells, right?
Yes.
And so that's where it gets. Like, I think we really need training in how to pick these up, because they are subtle. And for instance, like, I'll describe contentment as, you know, stop, bring your attention right here, right now in this room, and ask yourself the question, do I have everything that I need right here, right now? Because
it's
most
so
of the times we actually
do. Yeah. And right, in every session that I do with men, we start out with some kind of body awareness, noticing. And I say, you know, even numbness is a sensation, right? You might think that numbness is the lack of sensation, but there's an actual way that you're feeling numbness. And so you start to tune in more and more to those subtleties. And then, the more you have the consciousness, the awareness of that, the experience of that, the more you can have them, right? It's like, then if I think about it concretely, going back to the bedroom, you can have an orgasm that's, you know, 10 times more expansive or pleasurable because you're actually feeling the experience of being in your body.
Yeah. And I think, and I meant to mention this earlier when we were talking about the bedroom, but I think presence has a large part in it. Just being with yourself and your partner in the room when you're in the room.
Agreed.
And you mentioned that kind of when you were after the memorial service or the funeral.
Yes.
Where I think you weren't present. Like your mind wasn't there because you were thinking about what happened earlier in the day. And he picked that up.
And he could feel that. And he was present enough to say, hey, I don't think you're here. I don't think you're
present. Which is impressive. And even more impressive than that he gave you room to feel that.
I know. It's really amazing.
But I really think there's something to that that is a extremely powerful bonding experience. I can't quite put words on it.
I know. It's really hard to put words to what happens.
It's like a connection of the hearts.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I think of is, are you familiar with heart math?
A little bit. Not so much.
So one of the things I love that they did, they're research-based and it's like Big Sur or something like that. But they showed that the human heart projects an electromagnetic field about 6 feet outside of the body that can be measured 6 feet outside of the body. And I think, to me, I like thinking of that as one of the ways that empathy can occur. That, you know, those mirror neurons in the brain can sense the energy from the hearts commingling.
Yes.
And I think that when my heart rate syncs with your heart rate, that there's something incredibly powerful about that.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And again, I often have a really hard time putting words to it, but it's like when you no longer have to prove to someone that you're good enough or you're smart enough or you're strong enough, and you know that you're loved for who you are. And, you know, there's that welcoming and accepting. And then on top of that, not only are your minds meeting, but your heart is meeting and your body's meeting and your soul is meeting. It becomes this way more multidimensional experience that is beautiful and ecstatic. And, you know, not always, right? There's pain and the struggle that we all experience. But in those times, it is like nothing else that we can experience.
Yeah. And when you were at the beginning of that comment, I was thinking about, you know, you have a partner, ideally you have a partner that sees the potential in you, that sees your worth, that accepts it unconditionally. So that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin that I discovered was I have to believe that I'm worthy of that belief.
Yes. Yes.
I have to have the self-worth to receive that. And I had to do a little bit of work around that.
Yeah. Don't we all? Several years ago. I've been doing work on that for 40 something years.
Disentangling the programming of the past.
Totally. I mean, you know, and I do a lot of spiritual, psychological work, and just, I used to think like, why can't we just get rid of this? And now I realize it is woven into the very fabric of our beings and our identities. And so it takes some time and it often takes some support. And I think men especially have this idea, well, I should be able to do it on my own and I should be able to do it quickly. And right?
Of course. You
know, why is it not happening this way? And what's wrong with me? Because it's not happening this way. And that's just all a fallacy.
Yeah. That's how we're socialized, though, to be an army of one.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's why I love that Simon and Garfunkel song of I Am a Rock.
Yes.
I wanted to be the rock for years. I wanted to be the island.
Yes.
But it doesn't work out very well.
No, it doesn't work out very well.
Doesn't connect with happiness.
No.
Very well. No. So Shayna, in wrapping up, is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have? I mean, we've covered a lot of ground here. I've greatly enjoyed this conversation. Hmm. And the other part of the part B of that question is tell people where they can get a hold of you.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So you can get a hold of me at shaynajamescoaching.com and you can look for my podcast.
And spell that.
S-H-A-N-A.
There
Shayna James. And my podcast is Man Alive, and you can look for John's episode, Dr. John's episode on there as well, which will be amazing. And I feel really passionate about what happens when we start letting go of defenses, letting go of trying to prove, right? Being undefended with each other and really getting that so much of what we react to is not personal. And there is, just like we were talking about, it's hard to describe But what happens when two people start to come together without defenses and actually grow together, right? Actually learn to love together, actually learn to have more respect for themselves and each other. I mean, life, it's almost like you go from having a black and white life to a life full of color and taste and sound and music and orchestra and symphony, right? You know, life becomes so much richer and so much more beautiful and so much more deeply meaningful. And I often have men think about, okay, when you look back, if you go to the end of your life and you look back, what are you going to wish that you had experienced? Or what are you going to feel grateful that you've experienced? Or what are you going to realize actually wasn't so meaningful, and yet I kept pushing that button, trying to make the thing happen. So I think that's a really beautiful exercise to do too, is to look back from the end and see, God, what will be most important to me? And am I actually putting my attention and my action there?
Yeah, beautifully stated, and a great note to wrap up on. So Shayna, thank you so much for joining me. As I said, I think this is just a tremendous interview.
Thank you.
Which will be of great service for men.
Good. That makes me happy.
So thank you very much. And for all you avid listeners, feel free to check out more at theevolvedcaveman.com or at any fine establishment of podcasts. Thanks so much for listening. That's it for this episode of The Evolved Caveman. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.